This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. And I just briefly, really quickly, just wanted to read a couple of messages from Melina. Welcome back, Tass. Good to hear you. Another one there from...
Bless you, Melina. It's great to be back.
You know, from 317. And also here... No, I'm not going to read that one out.
share it with me later, Macca.
I will. So, Paul, we're going to hopefully speak to the Victorian Health Minister next. Do we have her on the line yet?
I'm just waiting for Jenny McCarkus just to ring through into the studio, Macca. Cool. So I'm going to give her a couple more seconds, and then if not, we'll try and make contact.
Okay. Just a couple of things before we speak to the Minister, Tass. I wanted to say to people, while we're all sitting at home, it's very easy for us to look at all different news and social media sources. It can be overwhelming. If you actually want valid, true, real information about coronavirus, you go to your state or territory's Department of Health website, right? That is where you'll find the correct, accurate, real advice, not fake news, not claptrap, not something that people want to happen. You know, if you rub an avocado skin on your left ear, you'll be immune.
Or, Macca, download the federal government's app. It's just called Coronavirus.
Yep.
It's available on Apple Store or on the Google Store. It's very easy to download. It's doesn't use up a lot of data. It's actually fantastic.
Great. We now have on the phone Victorian Health Minister Jenny McCarkos. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Macca, and good morning, Tess.
Good morning to you, Minister. It's great to have you on the airwaves this morning. And just before we actually proceed with the interview, can I just take this opportunity to acknowledge the work that you've been doing in ensuring that our state is kept safe and supported during these extraordinary times. So on behalf of certainly this studio and hopefully our community, I would like to say thank you.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's a situation that we're all in together, of course. We're facing the biggest public health challenge in 100 years. It's really been the biggest pandemic we've had since the Spanish flu back in 1918. And I just want to thank the LGBTI community for their support and cooperation during what is a very challenging time, as we've all had to change how we live our lives. I know that can create a lot of inconvenience and frustration for people, but I just want to thank people because clearly the vast majority of Victorians are heeding all the public health warnings and are doing the right thing. And, you know, some of the results and even today's numbers are starting to look increasingly more promising.
So tell us a bit about that, Minister.
Yeah, tell us today's numbers.
Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Okay.
Give us an update.
So the latest numbers of confirmed cases in Victoria is 1,265, and that's an increase of 24 from yesterday. Sadly, we've had another man in his 80s who's died in hospital overnight, and that's taken our death toll now to 14. But in terms of a number that we've been particularly following, that is the number of cases of what's called community transmission. And the reason why people focus a lot on community transmission is essentially what that means is the source of the infection is unknown. We know the vast majority of people who've acquired coronavirus have done so through overseas travel or their close contacts of that person, so they might be other household members and therefore have acquired it that way. But we've been seeing a steady increase of confirmed cases through community transmission, and it's now 118. But the good news is it's only up by 2 people compared to yesterday. So that's very promising, but of course we shouldn't be complacent because, you know, if we were to lift all the restrictions we've got in place tomorrow, we just would have a very huge spike in numbers again. But I just want to say that the fact that we only had 2 new cases since yesterday is you know, a really promising set of numbers. It's a good set of numbers. And I want to thank everyone for their assistance in that, because we would not have been able to do that if people hadn't been heeding the message to stay at home wherever possible.
So, Minister, I get a sense that the numbers are actually slowly declining. We're not getting the level of infection that we anticipated or expected. Some people call it flattening the curve, or the curve is beginning to turn a little bit. Is it time to actually take our foot off the brake in terms of the range of the restrictions that are in place at the moment?
No, not at all, Tass. If we look at what's happening overseas, particularly in the UK and the US at the moment, and we look at what's happening internationally, you know, we've got 1.6 million confirmed cases internationally across more than 200 countries, more than 100,000 people who've died, and we've seen particularly in a number of countries' health systems that are really, really struggling to cope. And I mentioned the UK and the US, and, you know, there's many other European countries, Spain and Italy in particular, you know, who are seeing very large numbers of deaths. So if we were to take the foot off the brake, as you've asked me, what would happen is just in a very short period of time, we would have a significant spike in the numbers. It's understood that one infected person, just walking around the community, living their life normally, has the potential to infect 400 others within 1 month. So
400
within 1 month. So if you just think about that for a moment, that means that you could have exponential growth in just a matter of weeks. And that's essentially what happened in those other countries. They didn't put the restrictions in place in early enough. And so they've had that exponential growth. It's kind of got away from them. And now they've had to really clamp down hard and put those lockdowns in place to slow it down. So, look, I don't take the view, as some people seem to be advocating, that that, you know, the economy is more important than lives. I do acknowledge that a lot of people are suffering at the moment. It's heartbreaking to see the number of people who've lost jobs or have had their hours reduced, their income affected.
Businesses broken.
Absolutely. Businesses closed down. I have absolute sympathy for everyone who's affected by this, but if we were to have taken a different point of view and have said the economy is the most important, so like Donald Trump did very early on, then we would have had thousands of people die in Australia.
Yeah, you don't have a job if you're dead, do you?
Well, that's right. That's right. So we have to prioritise public health and human life, and I think it's proven to be successful to date. But I ask for people's patience. You know, we know that the elderly, those who are immunocompromised, are particularly vulnerable. But we've also had young people end up in hospital and who have died overseas. We've had a man in his 50s in Victoria who sadly passed away. The others have typically been 70s, you know, 70s and 80s. But, you know, people who are immunocompromised are particularly vulnerable. And so for those people who have underlying medical conditions, I urge them to exercise extreme caution in terms of limiting their social movements and their interactions with other members of the community. So, you know, everyone needs to do the right thing here. It's some very good common sense here, and I know people get worked up about the rules. You know, we are asking people to live their lives very differently to what they've done in the past. So we've had to put in place rules to regulate human behaviour that we've never had to do before. So we can all get worked up about, you know, this sounds particularly harsh or that sounds particularly harsh. But at the end of the day, what we're aiming to achieve here is limit the amount of human interaction as much as is possible to avoid what is a very, very contagious virus from spreading across the community.
And Minister, if you think that this sounds a little bit odd today, or the sound of our show, it's because we're doing it remotely. We're operating from three or four different sites, and if we include you, you're our fifth site. Yes. So we're using technology to do our very best. We're taking the advice that's been given to us by the Chief Health Officer very, very seriously. Macra, I think you had a point you wanted to make.
Yeah, look,
I want to congratulate you on Joy and everyone at Joy FM for doing that, because you're walking the talk. You're actually putting social distancing in place in your studio and how you're running the radio station. So congratulations, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And keeping yourself safe.
We are.
Of course.
Look, I had a couple of questions, if I may, Minister. There's the advice currently, and if I understand this, is that I don't need to wear a mask, TAS doesn't need to wear a mask, because we're saving the masks for the healthcare workers, and I understand that. And where I'm leading with this is, let's assume that we had sufficient stock of masks. Let's assume that we did. Would we perhaps be advising folk that if you actually practice social distancing, you know, hand sanitizers, keeping the surfaces clean, and wearing a mask, if we had sufficient stock, you know, it's a hypothetical, but is there going to be a situation where if we had sufficient stock that we would be encouraging people to wear masks?
Well, we've been acting on the advice of our public health experts, Macca, and their advice has been that face masks aren't necessary just in terms of your general movements out in the community. Now, that advice might well change over time. The advice has been for people who are at home living with someone who has been diagnosed with coronavirus. So if you share a household with that person, then it is advisable to wear masks in that situation, because you're protecting yourself from someone who is positive, and you want that person, as they're moving around that household, to wear a mask. But the advice has been not to do it for the general community at this point in time. So, look, just in terms of masks and its availability, we've been working incredibly hard since this started to secure the supplies of personal protective equipment that our healthcare workers will need. We worked with the federal government to get a manufacturing company in Victoria to scale up its production. They're the only manufacturer of surgical masks in Australia. We've now worked with another company to manufacture ventilators. You know, there's a lot of production that's happening to secure our supplies. But I have to say, one thing that's become very apparent from this whole pandemic is that we are very reliant on overseas supply chains for everything that we need to respond to a public health emergency. I hope that what comes out of this pandemic is conversations across all levels of government about how we support our manufacturing industry in Australia.
I just think we
cannot have this ever happen ever again, where we are all madly scrambling, not just Australia, but the whole world, in fact, to secure the same things, testing kits, masks, gloves, you name it. Now, we've put in massive orders for hundreds of millions of items to come to us from overseas suppliers, but I'd like to see more local manufacturers, you know, making these things here, so we don't have to have this situation ever occur again.
Tash, you can have a quick question.
Just a quick question, Minister. Can we see a change in the testing eligibility criteria? There are still a number of people out in the community who are concerned that they may have been in contact with the virus. Yeah. At the moment, most people don't meet the eligibility criteria. I understand that this might be a question around supplies as well, but do you have a quick sort of view on that one?
Absolutely. So what we've been doing is we've been changing and broadening the testing criteria throughout this process. So we said it was an evolving situation. Initially, all the focus was on return travellers, because they were perceived as the biggest high-risk group of people. And if we look at the numbers of people who have come back from overseas, it has been overwhelmingly people from, actually, interestingly, because all the focus initially was on China, the UK and the US are the two biggest source countries where people have come back with COVID-19, and then they've actually gone on to create little clusters in the community of infections. So we will broaden it out further. We've included healthcare workers as a priority group, then we've gone and broadened it to police, childcare workers, teachers, disability workers and others. I think we're going to get to a point soon, very, very soon, where we're going to broaden it out to anyone who's got relevant symptoms. So I think you can expect an announcement from me very soon about that, and that will then pick up, more cases through community transmission. So we've kind of, it's evolving because we've now had everyone who's returned from overseas go into mandatory quarantine in a hotel. And that was sadly because some people were just not following the advice and staying at home. So that's inconvenient to them, and I thank them for their patience. But it now means we can revisit the testing criteria again and look at broadening it out further. So I think you will expect an announcement from me about that very soon.
We look forward to hearing that. Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning. I know that you've had an incredibly grueling and busy schedule. Thank you for taking time out to speak with us and to engage with our community. You're, of course, always welcome. And keep up the amazing work.
Thank you. And if I could just remind everyone, of course, not to forget to get their flu shot this year because we don't want people to have both coronavirus and the flu. They'll be particularly unwell, and so we just want to remind people that now's a good time to be checking in with your GP or your pharmacist and checking that they've got stock there so you can get your flu shot.
It is.
As soon as I'm eligible, I'll be in there, believe me.
And also, Minister, I just want to also put on record the great work you're doing and your colleagues, but the support the Victorian Government has given to Joy in this time has been significant, and it's very much appreciated. It's helping keep us on air. So thank you. I know you're part of that decision. Thank you so much. And my advice to everyone is, of course, stay in, stay tuned to Joy, and stay alive.
Yes, stay at home and listen to Joy FM.
Everyone. Thanks so much, Minister.
We'll have to make that a grab, Macca.
We'll make that a grab, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.